Hi, my name is Carolyn, and my favorite movie is The Prince of Egypt.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites, the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. Tonight, I am joined by a longtime internet friend, first-time talker, Carolyn Browender. Carolyn, how are you doing tonight?
You know, Leah, I'm glad to be talking with you about a movie that makes me happy because I've been feeling pretty down about the news on the Supreme Court this past weekend. So I'm delighted to be with you to talk about something that makes me happy.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here. You know, I got up this weekend. I didn't have an interview banked. I was like, nobody wants to hear people talk about favorite things right now. And then I decided, no, we need, not like this podcast is like a beacon of hope for people, but like, if we don't, we can't live in 24/7 despair. You know, we have to talk about the things that uplift us, the reasons that we stay in community, the reasons that we are building a better world. And so, in fact, I do think talking to people about their favorite things has a place, even in a dark time.
100%. Yeah, I think being able to talk about our favorite things together, it creates more opportunities for connection and community, which is what we need right now.
Yeah. And I truly don't remember how we started following each other online, but I know that, and if you don't want to talk about this, we'll take it out. But I think I must have started following you when you started going to seminary.
That could be. I don't know if I've told you this, Leah. So way back in college, I had this browser add-on called StumbleUpon.
I remember StumbleUpon.
And that brought me to your old blog, Accidentally Jewish.
Oh my gosh.
So I found you way back. That was probably like 2007, 2008. Yeah. So I'd been reading what you were writing for a little while. And then, yeah, at some point we connected on Twitter. And yeah, I think connecting right around seminary time sounds about right if I had to make a guess.
Oh my gosh, the StumbleUpon, there is like no way to explain to people on the internet today, like what those, like, so StumbleUpon, it was a browser add-in, and the idea was, it was kind of like, no, to even call it compared to Tumblr is wrong, but like, if you were reading something on a blog and you thought other people would want to read it, you would add it to StumbleUpon. And then other people, like if you were just bored and wanted to like stumble through the internet without an algorithm, StumbleUpon would just like, you could just keep clicking it and like Russian roulette around blogs.
Yeah, it was a really excellent tool for college students like myself who were maybe procrastinating on a paper. And I found so many just kind of cool and interesting sites, including your blog. So shout out to StumbleUpon, which I wonder, I don't know, rest in peace, I assume. Yeah.
Oh boy, the times when I would have a post like go viral on StumbleUpon, like the things that StumbleUpon could do to your statistics on a blog were wild. Because, you know, I would kind of putter around like 40 to 100 hits a day, and then you'd have a StumbleUpon day, and it would be like a few thousand people suddenly would be on your blog in a day. It was wild.
That's fascinating. I hadn't thought about, yeah, kind of how the analytics could look at that on the back end.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you like, yeah, you would plug in some very like general interests when you were signing up for it. And then, yeah, thumbs up, thumbs down with certain pages. And
yeah.
So yeah, what a great plugin.
Oh,
what a
great fun
connection that it created out of it.
How fun. That is really fun. I have a couple other friends that, like my friend Dave, I remember the first time I found his blog because I was doing research on, it was when I worked in public relations, and I was doing research on like what people write about shampoo and conditioner. And I found this article that he had written about a particular shampoo, and I started following him from that. And he, like, the same way, he was like, oh no, like, I had found your blog in this other way, like, other than just me leaving comments. So it was a much smaller internet.
It was so small, quaint internet world back then.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Can I ask you a question about seminary?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you, because I am most familiar with Jewish seminaries, so I know that people go, they become a rabbi with like one of the major movements, and there's some mm-hmm. small seminaries that aren't affiliated with a movement. So these are my two questions. Did you attend seminary with like a major movement of Christianity? And two, is the degree you got that you're a pastor, or is the degree you got that you're like a master of divinity? Like, it was an academic seminary or a pulpit seminary?
Those are good questions. So so the seminary I attended was historically affiliated with the Presbyterian Church, mm-hmm. but because of some drama actually about biblical scholarship back in the day, it's no longer affiliated with any particular denomination. And I would say tries hard to be a fairly interfaith seminary. I would say that at least when I was there, which wasn't that long ago, majority of students are some flavor of Christian, but there are also several Buddhist students. There's a growing Buddhist and interreligious engagement program there. Ditto with for Muslim students, Muslim chaplaincy and training type of work. So it's working on kind of becoming a more interfaith space. And I think some things it does well on and some things it doesn't do well on in that sure. regard. So graduating from that seminary, I graduate the Master of Divinity. The ordination process for me is a separate thing outside of the degree. And I would say actually at the seminary I attended, there were a decent number of folks there who pursued either an MDiv or one of the other degrees offered, not necessarily planning on doing ministry, but maybe a lot of folks interested in nonprofit work or activism or incorporating faith into the arts, but just people kind of thinking about how faith works and exists in so many different contexts. So ordination is a kind of separate thing for me.
Okay.
Which is a whole other, a whole sure. other adventure.
Because I have a friend who is a Presbyterian pastor. Mm-hmm. So he would have, he still would have been called seminary, but the mm-hmm. final degree, the degree at the end would have been a different degree than you went for.
They're the same degrees. So many, though not all, Christian denominations want you to get the Master of Divinity degree.
Oh, okay.
But then just the actual process of getting ordained is separated-ish from that. Like, there's okay. still that hope that you're going to get that education. But then there's all these committees through your particular denominational body. Again, varying depending on denominations, but often lots of committees and meetings and maybe some exams that you have to take.
Right. Okay. That helps. I just didn't. And it's interesting that they're striving towards being an interfaith seminary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely one of the things that attracted me to the particular seminary I ended up attending. My own background, I come from an interfaith family. I joined the United Methodist Church as an adult, grew up in a Lutheran and then primarily culturally Jewish family of origin, and mm-hmm. so was definitely interested in learning in a place where that kind of background was maybe relatively normal and mm-hmm. folks were kind of interested in. I had a lot of fun times and interesting times exploring other seminaries that were more closely aligned with my denomination. But something I really liked about the place that I ended up going was just the massively varied backgrounds and the different kind of vocations that people felt called to at that particular school.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. I knew you did like very deep scholarship because the tweets that you would post about the research you were doing were like deep. They were like high level, like the type of research you would do as an outsider bystander was like so deeply academic. And then when you would talk sometimes about the sermons, because you had, it seems like you maybe had a sermon class or like everyone had to give X number of sermons during seminary.
Yeah.
Like those headlines of your sermons also, I found very interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think the major goal with the Master of Divinity degree, as I understand it, is to sort of, you get that sort of rich academic background, but then you also get sort of the practical skills, like, okay, like here's how you maybe have a scholarly approach to studying the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you actually like talk about that?
Right.
Whether it's in a sermon or in some kind of small group, and how you do that in a way that's respectful of people mm-hmm. who maybe have different perspectives while also still like being authentic to your own commitments as well. So that was, I really enjoyed being in seminary because it was just such a nice balance of those kind of practical both implementation skills and people skills, frankly. Like I now work as a chaplain, which I mm-hmm. really enjoy. And then there's that kind of heady stuff that I just really ended up nerding out about mm-hmm. once I got there. So
thank you for sharing that. I had questions I don't always get to ask, so I'm happy to ask them tonight. But you agreed to come on the podcast, not just so I could grill you about your experience in grad school, but to talk about one of your all-time Desert Island movies.
Yes.
Which is The Prince of Egypt.
Yes.
So this is a Disney musical about Moses, right? I've never seen
it. Actually, Leah, it's a DreamWorks. It's DreamWorks.
It's DreamWorks. Oh, okay. So it's the people who made Anastasia.
I think it was supposed to be this like big rival. Yes, the people who made Anastasia, not a problematic movie at all.
Oh no, is it problematic?
I'm making it more serious than it needs to be. No, I get a little snarky about Anastasia because half of my family like had to leave Russia because of Anastasia's family.
Mm.
But I think it's a perfectly fine movie with lovely music and beautiful animation as well. Just not my personal favorite.
So I've never seen the movie Anastasia, but the musical, the staged musical of it is wonderful.
I've been seeing some stuff about that. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah. There's stuff about like, I think maybe they take a little bit heavier the parts when they leave Russia, and because I got to see Great Comet, Natasha and Pierre in the Great Comet also, which is like kind of the same era of Russian history. So for me, in my head, Anastasia and the Great Comet play off of each other and somehow gave me richer Russian czarist history than I understood.
That sounds really, I hadn't thought about that, but that sounds really fascinating. I really wanted to see Great Comet, and then it had a disappointingly short run on Broadway, if I remember correctly.
Yes. And then it blew up at the end because, Oak, who was in the original cast of Hamilton, who played Hercules Mulligan, he got the role of, he followed Josh Groban in the role of Pierre. And he, like, wasn't the bringer they thought he would be. And so then without properly communicating it to Oak or the cast, they then cast Mandy Patinkin in, like, a four-week run that, like, Oak was supposed to come back after Mandy. And it was when it was at a point, I mean, Broadway's been reckoning with racism for always, but it was like Mandy Patinkin was like, I didn't know Oak didn't know. So I'm out. He was like, I'm not that guy. So Mandy stepped down. Oak got pissed. He resigned. The creator of it, Dave Malloy, had to come in for like the last three. It just like completely fell apart
because that's so sad.
All you needed to do was communicate with your cast.
Seriously. What a leadership ball drop. That's so disappointing on so many levels.
Yeah. But Prince of Egypt, a DreamWorks movie.
Yes.
When did you encounter this movie for the first time?
Prince of Egypt, I actually saw it in theaters with my dad and my sister. And we weren't a huge movie theater going family. And I'm pretty sure I must have pestered my parents, like, please let us go see this in theaters. And I was just Googling, and it looks like I was about 10 or 11 when it came out.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was so cool. The animation was beautiful. The music was beautiful. And I also felt very connected to the story. I think both my family, on Easter, we had this tradition of watching the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. And Prince of Egypt is arguably a more like child-friendly and also modern telling of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was that. And then there was also the half of my family is Jewish. And so I feel connected to it through that as well.
Yeah.
And now, of course, it's like, so many different kinds of people feel connected to the Exodus story for so many different reasons.
Yes.
But yeah, so I was 10 or 11 when I saw it in theaters, I think at the Mall of America, actually.
Ooh, fun.
And then just found myself kind of continuously revisiting it, in particular revisiting the soundtrack, because the soundtrack is just gorgeous and compelling and just wonderful. But yeah, anytime I am feeling down or sad, I will watch the movie or listen to the soundtrack. During Holy Week, something I like to do is I'll do sort of a Bible movie double header. So that will involve The Prince of Egypt and then Jesus Christ Superstar, the 70s version.
Nice.
And so, yeah, it just doesn't get old and just brings me a lot of joy.
So I'm looking at, I just Googled Prince of Egypt, right? And the soundtrack was, I'm going to drive you crazy. Was the movie a musical, or is this just a great soundtrack? Because there's like Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston.
It's a movie
Boys
musical.
Boys to Men.
It's a movie musical. And then on the soundtrack, there are also, like, you know, in the end credits when they have like the pop star arrangements of sort of like some of the major songs in the movie.
Yes.
But I do think that the Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston version of
When You Believe,
I think that probably did pretty well on the charts. But yeah, but it's a movie musical with then these Boys to Men and Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston coming in during the credits.
Okay. That makes more sense to me. And did you get the, like, you had the CD and you had, what a cast.
Yes. That was something I did not appreciate as a youth, and then when I was looking at IMDb as an adult, I was like, you have Ralph Fiennes as Ramesses, who, like, let's talk about how Ralph Fiennes is just like I think, contractually required to play any villain of the Jewish people in any movie ever. So we have Ralph Fiennes as Ramesses. You have Steve Martin and now I'm blanking out on other folks.
And Martin Short.
Martin Short.
Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum is Aaron, which, like, I remember, I was like, why is that voice so familiar? And then I was like, oh, doy, Jeff Goldblum. And then it's like Michelle Pfeiffer
is Zipporah.
Yes.
Sandra, I'm gonna share my screen with you. Like,
yes. Oh yeah, Sandra Bullock is Miriam.
Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Helen Mirren as the queen. And then Val Kilmer as Moses.
Right.
It's just like it is a huge, like, star-studded cast. That was not something I had an appreciation for as a child, but now it's like, how did they get all these people?
Yeah, and then it's Hans Zimmer did the score.
Yes, and then Stephen Schwartz did the songs, I believe. But
yeah,
I'm normally not a huge Hans Zimmer fan for scores, but mm-hmm. I think he does well on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's the animated modern retelling of Moses and the Exodus, or like Moses's whole life.
It's more focused on Moses and in particular his relationship with Ramesses.
Okay.
It at the very like beginning of the movie, there's this sort of card that says, you know, this is a story that's very important to many people. And we took creative liberties and explorations with this for telling a compelling story. And so in addition to the music, what I find most compelling, and I think probably what I found compelling as a youth who at the time my sister and I got on each other's last nerves. Now we get along much better, but there's some stuff in there about complex family dynamics and sibling rivalry as well.
Sure.
And so that was also something that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, because you've got Aaron, Moses, and Miriam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Moses is chosen to be the leader, but he is like, I have a stutter, so maybe not me. Like, maybe my brother. Maybe yes. Aaron.
Yeah.
Maybe not me. So he's constantly trying to get out of it.
Yeah, well, and then Prince of Egypt, it more focuses on Moses' relationship with Ramesses and how they're raised as brothers and love each other very much. And then God comes and tells Moses, like, you basically have to become estranged from your beloved brother for the purpose of leading my people to freedom.
Yeah, it's so interesting because that part of the story is never touched on.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about Moses at synagogue, we never talk about the other relationships he had, or I'm sure that in the years that this came out and was more popular, that I'm sure there are rabbis who touched on it, but never. That's just fascinating that we never talk about it.
Well, and that's it's just, there's some interesting stuff in there about kind of adopted families and chosen families. And then what if your chosen family, or the people that are in a lot of ways your chosen family, are actually like your biological family after all. So there's a lot of that messy stuff that I think as a child I didn't appreciate, but now I find very compelling and very thought provoking.
Yeah.
And something that I appreciate now that I think I didn't appreciate at the time is, I think this is one of the last, like, truly epic, mostly hand-drawn animation movies. And it's just beautiful. Like, yeah. There are a few scenes that incorporate CGI. I think the parting of the Red Sea is probably the most significant one. But it's just, when you, especially now, you know, when we're so used to looking at these sort of Pixar-style animations, which are very cool. I like them, but it's just a different kind of movie watching experience. Yeah.
So was there ever a time in your life that this kind of fell off the list for you?
I think No, because I don't think we had this on VHS or DVD at my house after we saw it in theaters. And so I think I got the soundtrack, but I think there was actually a decent stretch of time where I wasn't able to watch the movie. Probably like junior high, high school. But it just has songs that stick with you. And so always found myself coming back to the soundtrack. Excuse me. But yeah, watching the movie itself, I think probably once I was like out of college and stuff, I would say is when I came back to the movie. And as I think I mentioned to you in the little blurb I sent you, watching it again during and now after seminary, I think there was a point where I was watching it with my not even remotely religious spouse, and I had like one of my study Bibles in front of me, and I'm just kind of paging along, like, okay, like this part, that they're showing on the screen are these verses, and this part is like where the writers are taking creative liberties, and just being a total nerd about it, but it was fun for me. And my spouse, bless his heart,
Put up with it.
rolls with it. He's much nicer about that stuff than I
Did you, when you were in seminary, did you? So, when did your double header of Prince of Egypt and Jesus Christ Superstar start?
am. Probably spring 2020.
I remember spring 2020.
Remember that? So that was spring 2020 was actually my last year of seminary. And I went to seminary in New York, and we were in seminary housing, and we were basically told, if you have somewhere else to go, please
Go.
leave. So fled halfway across the country to Minnesota, where my parents lived and where my spouse and I now live. And we were, because I was so early on, we were in an Airbnb for 2 weeks before going to stay with my parents, because I was just petrified, like, we're coming from New York. What if I have an ace, like, what if one of us has an asymptomatic case?
We didn't know
So
anything in April of
We knew not,
2020.
like, we were just starting to like wear masks, like just starting. And I part of that quarantine period was during Holy Week. And I was so miserable and so brokenhearted during that time. And it's like, we need to, I think I had already downloaded Jesus Christ Superstar at some point, but hadn't done so for Prince of Egypt. I think it had maybe been streaming somewhere for a little while though. Yeah, I was like, oh, I what like yeah, I think it was on Netflix, and then it wasn't. I was like, no, we have to like buy this. I have to be able to watch it. So it hasn't been a particularly long tradition, but I think it's a good one.
It's a super fun one. Well, I guess what I was curious was, did you ever do a Prince of Egypt night at seminary, like in your student housing? Did you ever get everybody in the lounge to like watch each other's favorite religious movies or movies?
I hadn't, and now I really wish I had. I do have general plans once like COVID properly simmers down. I do have plans to just have some kind of, double header movie night at my place around that time of year, where we'll watch Prince of Egypt first. My friends with kids can bring the kids. We can have a snack break. Kids can head out, and then we can watch Jesus Christ Superstar. So I do have plans to make this like to make this an event. Just forces larger than myself are currently preventing that.
This pesky pandemic that is
Yeah, that pesky pandemic.
now in solidly into year three, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's bleak. That's bleak.
Yeah. That's why we need our favorite movies.
That's why we need our favorite movies to cheer us up and to inspire us when we're feeling down.
So I'm curious, the time that you watched it and you had your study Bible open in front of you, what are the scenes that you think they portray in a way that is how you imagine the Bible happening, or has their telling of a moment become your primary way of imagining a moment in the Bible? Are there any of those moments that you think they're like, that they just chef's kiss, perfect?
That's a good question.
Your favorite interpretations that they made?
I think the burning bush scene, it's really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also such... The other thing about this story, right, is like it's been told in so many different places and portrayed in so many pieces of art that I can't even think of where I would have gotten like a pure, like my own understanding of the story. But I do think the burning bush scene, the animation is really interesting and beautiful. And then something I noticed when I was, I think either on IMDb or, you know, sometimes if you're watching something on Prime and you hit pause, mm-hmm. it'll have like who is speaking or on the screen at that time. For the voice of God in that scene, the voice that they use is Val Kilmer's. It's the voice of Moses.
Oh.
And it's done a little bit differently. Like you can't immediately tell that it's the same actor.
Uh-huh.
But when I noticed that, I was like, that's just so interesting. And I think it can be interpreted in a lot of different ways too.
Yeah. What
either intentions or what the writers were maybe trying to say about how God speaks to people.
Uh-huh.
You know, is that, you know, maybe a more cynical take would be like that, people convince themselves that they're hearing God's voice to do maybe very good things or maybe not so good things.
Right.
Or maybe God's voice comes out of you because it is this, you know, kind of, you know, it's from times of discernment or deep trust where your own thinking and God's thinking are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a scene that I really like and find very thought provoking. And the orchestrations, again, are just beautiful.
Yeah. It's also interesting. So I have not seen the Val Kilmer documentary. But I did just see Top Gun, and he reprises his role of Iceman.
I've never seen Top Gun, believe it or not.
It's okay. It's not required. I will not cast you out to the desert for having not seen a military propaganda movie. But Val Kilmer has had throat cancer, so he can't talk anymore. And so it's really interesting and beautiful how when they reprise his character, he acts and he is like gives the performance with the most depth of anyone in the whole movie. But I'm just thinking about, you know, in this movie where he's a voice actor and he is voicing both Moses and God, and now being at a time in his life where he can no longer speak. And I guess that's just like a point of trivia I'm sharing that I don't quite have it. Can't quite take it deeper than that, but it's just kind of like, you know, like as he looks back at his career to have had this moment where he was the voice of both a prophet and of Adonai, of God, and then to eventually lose what arguably is the bulk of his craft.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to do his make his craft.
Yeah. You should have Phil Kilmer on this podcast, Leah. Ask him that question.
I would love to.
I suppose it would be hard for him to talk.
Yes.
on reflection, that might not work as well.
I don't know if he's done the Roger Ebert computer.
Mm.
Because Roger Ebert had talked enough on TV that they had enough samples to rebuild his digital voice.
I didn't know that. That's really cool.
Yeah. Well, he was a Chicago columnist, and mm-hmm. so he was very high profile here, and a lot of that stuff, especially towards the end of his life, just got a lot of headlines and news and blog posts. So Roger Ebert had his voice recreated by the same people that did, like, Stephen
Hawking?
Hawking's voice.
Okay.
So I imagine Val Kilmer has enough recorded voice sessions that he could have his voice That's recreated.
True. That's true. It could still happen. It could work. Yeah.
Are there moments of the story, when you think about the story of Exodus and the relationship between Moses and his and Ramsey, that were left out that you wish you could have seen put into the movie? Is there anything you think is missing from the movie?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, something that I like about the movie is that, at least last time I checked, there's relatively little in the Bible about the sort of actual relationship, nitty gritty between Ramesses and Moses. So I liked that that the creators of the movie explored that.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, I think it makes Moses a bit maybe easier to connect with, the fact that even though it's not in the text that many of us read, seeing Moses on screen grappling with what does family mean?
Mm-hmm.
What does loyalty mean? Who should I be loyal to? You know, is there a compromise here, or is there not? I think those are all themes that the movie explores really, really beautifully and thoughtfully.
Yeah, I really need to add it to my Passover mix.
Yes, yes.
I must. So I don't know if you ever saw it, but there was an official Prince of Egypt family Passover Haggadah. My upstairs neighbor Ezra, his father was the editor for it. And it is very hard to find, but it does exist in the world, because when it was originally made, DreamWorks, the people at DreamWorks, like, saw the marketing opportunity. They weren't dumb. They weren't dum-dums. So they had, it was either DreamWorks saw it or Ezra's dad had the idea, and DreamWorks said, yeah, obviously. And then whoever now owns, like, the copyright, like, they've had difficulty getting a permission to do it again, to do a reprint. Man. But there is a family Haggadah that is out there in the world with the art from the movie that's, like, a full Haggadah. It can be found.
I know what I'm doing as soon as we wrap this up. Seeing, like, where on eBay and how much this is gonna...
Right? You know.
I just moved, so I shouldn't quite jump up. But that, wow, can't believe I didn't know about that. But I'm concerned it might be a little cringy, but I also really want to see it.
Well, it's not, I can tell you it's not cringy, because it was an Orthodox rabbi who layered it into a Haggadah. So it's not... I mean, if anything, you might find it more traditional than you like in a Haggadah.
Interesting.
But it's not, it is certainly not going to be a watered down one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
But it exists. And I will, after we're done, I'll text Ezra and I will say, like, what are the words to find it on eBay?
That is fascinating and very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be... I wish they would get the copyright permission to re-release it. It would be so cool.
It would be very cool, and I think they would make a lot of money.
I think so, too. I think so, too. Especially now. I just think people are... Well, the people who grew up with it are now parents, are now mm-hmm. building their new... They're now the adults with in charge of the traditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, or they're becoming the adults in charge of traditions. They're wrestling the traditions away. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what a fun way to, I always wanted to go to a Passover Seder with my dad's side of the family when I was a kid, but he always described them as being very boring. And so we never went.
Oh.
But like, what a good way. I went to, you know, Seders as an adult on my own eventually. Yeah. But what a fun way to, or what, a, you know, one way to make a Seder fun for kids would be
yeah.
incorporating the Prince of Egypt, I think. And
also, what a fun way to make it fun for adults.
Yes, yes. Let Prince of Egypt sing along.
Yes.
In addition to all the other songs
yeah.
that are sung at Seders.
I do a lot of parody songs. I do a lot of Broadway covers at mine. Mine is a very... silly song-oriented Seder.
That sounds like a blast.
It's fun. It's really fun. Yeah. I hopefully this upcoming year will be the year that I get to like go big again and do like another big Seder.
I hope so too.
Yeah. I've missed hosting at a big level. Stupid pandemic.
Yeah. How many folks do you usually have?
25 or 30.
That's a pretty solid turnout.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah. There's a lot of, now they're the under five, I guess there are some 6-year-olds now. My friends all had their babies in the last 5 years.
Okay.
So it used to be 22 people, now it's 30. And now there's a lot more kids. So it's just like a whole different situation. But I do like everyone in the living room for the Seder. And then when it's time for dinner, we take a break, we set up tables, like we completely rearrange and then sit back down. I don't make everybody sit at the table for 2 hours, you know, going around the room or anything.
That's a good way to break it up.
What else about Prince of Egypt, what is for you an ideal watch party vibe? Like, what's the food? What's the, because you envision this being the kid part of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. What are you looking for in your Prince of Egypt watching experience?
I have thought about this in relationship to this double header party I will at some point have. I think Mediterranean food, clearly, right?
Oh, yes.
If it's happening during Passover, I suppose matzah could be there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it necessarily has to be. But yeah, I think bring out the falafel, bring out the hummus, bring out the pita and or matzah. Bring out the feta cheese. Yeah, I think you just gotta go with that Mediterranean spread.
Nice.
And that's also just good noshing food, right? Like, just you can put together your little plate, watch the movie, and
yeah.
So I think you gotta go with a Mediterranean spread.
I like that. And then like a red Jello mold for the Red Sea. You could do a bundt cake. You could do a bundt cake that's red Jello, and then cut just a little pie out of it, and then you would have a red sea.
This, as someone who was raised in a Lutheran and Jewish interfaith household, this is just like a perfect like red sea Jello salad.
Right?
Wow. This is an exciting challenge. And I don't know if I've ever made Jello salad myself. Usually just my grandma makes it.
Right. It's okay. Got to pass to a new generation.
Yes. Red sea Jello salad. This is one of these Look, winters in Minnesota are long. We need hobbies we can do inside here. So.
What are your when you were when you had the years that you were like, I only have the soundtrack. One, did you have it on CD or cassette tape?
CD.
Okay. So what were the what were like the tracks that you would skip to? Like, did you like the hip hop and the Whitney Houston and the Boyz II Men songs, or were you going for the like Death of the Firstborn talking to Zipporah ones, Zipporah?
I think as a youth I was maybe a bit of a snob about the poppier cover.
Okay.
Now I appreciate them as sort of their own thing. But yeah, I definitely focus more on the sort of classic soundtrack songs. The movie opens with Deliver Us, which I think it's like 7 minutes total, but it just opens this sort of like mysterious, either a trumpet or a French horn, and then zoom, we're all of a sudden on the ground in Egypt, and you see all these people enslaved and being whipped and talking about the horrors of slavery. And like you have these big swelling choral components, and then these like heartbreaking solo emotional moments where oh my gosh, now I'm brain farting on Moses' mother's name, but Miriam and Moses and Miriam's mom, bringing him out to the Nile to escape being killed. Like it's just it. The movie just starts with a bang in a really, and if that doesn't suck you in, I don't know what will. So, Deliver Us is, I think, like if you listen to one song on the entire
Okay.
soundtrack, I think that's the one.
That's the one.
That's
Yocheved is his mom.
you'll have it. Thank you.
You're welcome. I had to Google. Like I was just like, "Oh my gosh," because I know Jethro is his mother-in-law, but I was or his father-in-law, but I was like, "Oh my gosh, who's his mom?" Yocheved.
So thank you. Yes, but you'll have it. And she's voiced, I think, by a pretty famous Israeli singer. Was just this really robust vibrato, just a gorgeous, almost kind of guttural, sort of weeping kind of voice in this song. And I think the song that got probably the most play off the soundtrack is When You Believe. I personally prefer the soundtrack version. It's
Oh,
one of
the Michelle
those.
Pfeiffer version versus the Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston.
Yeah, I personally prefer that, but that's, I think, maybe more of an aesthetic choice there. Although it does have a nice little Hebrew interlude that I also enjoy. But if I had to pick like one song, if I were trying to convince someone, like this, you need to either listen to the soundtrack or watch this movie, it would be Deliver Us, because I think it
Okay.
encompasses like all the best kind of styles of singing and music in one song.
Yeah, so Deliver Us is Eden Rigel and Ofra Hazzah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And it is, I will link to all of this. Prince of Egypt, all over YouTube. It is not, they are not, you can tell that it's not Disney because it's all over YouTube.
Yes.
They're letting people enjoy the soundtrack.
I wonder if it's still up, but I know at one point there was this YouTube video of When You Believe and like different lines of the song and all of the different translations of
Ooh.
languages like put together. So you have like English and Hebrew and Chinese and Thai and Spanish, like sound quality is a little eh, but if it's still up, it's still really cool.
Nice. So it'll be like a multi-language.
Yeah, like multi-language, When You Believe. Let me see
it's
if
still
I can.
out there.
Yes. God, it's probably been on YouTube for like 12 years at this point.
Victor Long, 777.
All right. Shout out to Victor Long, 777. Thank you, Victor Long.
Yeah, he put it up in 2008, March 17th, 2008. Oh, there's another video that it suggests next is When You Believe, repeat 1 hour. Just the song on repeat for an hour.
I have days where I want to do that.
Yeah.
So kudos to whoever made that
Yeah. I definitely have days when I do that.
happen.
I have
Sometimes.
years when I do that. What am I talking about? Where like one song will just come. My iTunes is like there's like it's unwritten by Natasha Bedingfeld. There were probably 3 years where that is like the song I listen to. Because it's good to write to. It's good to write to a song about things being unwritten.
Yeah. I'm
So.
impressed that you can write to a song with lyrics. That was one of the challenges I ran into in college and then being back in seminary. It's like, oh, I can't listen to songs with lyrics because I'm like in my head, I start singing along to it and I can't actually like think about what I want to write.
Well, one song on repeat for hours is different than listening to a song with lyrics, I think. I wasn't listening to her. I wasn't even listening to the whole album Unwritten. I was listening to one Natasha Bedingfeld song.
Still, I mean,
Yeah.
I don't know, something about my brain, I'll just like, yeah, no matter how many times I've heard it, I'll still end up kind of following along with
Oh,
the
yeah.
lyrics.
I've got friends that can like do work and listen to podcasts, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't have your brain. I cannot.
There was a point where I had a job that like there was a lot of copying and pasting or spreadsheet kind of stuff that didn't require, so like that stuff I would listen to podcasts or
Yeah.
music to. But actual substantive work can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely not. What haven't I asked you about Prince of Egypt? Either lessons or things you love about it, moments you love, that if we hung up and you didn't get to say it, you would be so sad.
I mean, I think one of the nice things, one of the cool things about Prince of Egypt is you can be a Bible nerd or a religious person like myself and engage with it that way and get a lot out of it potentially for spiritual nourishment or just, you know, like I was kind of talking about earlier, just sheer nerdery. Or if that's not your cup of tea, you can just watch it and enjoy the beautiful animation and beautiful music
Yeah.
and compelling characters. I think it's one of those movies that if you go into it with an open mind and you're someone who generally likes movie musicals, that probably
Right.
does help.
Yeah.
I think it can be a good option just for everybody to enjoy. And yeah, I think that's kind of my, if I had to give an elevator speech about Prince of Egypt, there would be that, and then, you know, really zooming in on that beautiful hand-drawn animation as well.
Yeah.
If you're an animation geek and want to see one of those movies where that kind of that earlier blend of the hand-drawn and the CGI, this is also, I think, a good one for you.
Yeah. It came out in I was looking, it came out in 98, which is when I was studying abroad in college. And that whole semester that I was abroad is for me a lost semester of pop culture. Because movies got to Argentina, like movies that came out in the US didn't get to Argentina before I left Argentina. So when I was in Argentina and I went to movies, I saw movies I'd like kind of already seen in the US, but like maybe dubbed or. And I think Prince of Egypt for me got lost in that just pop culture vacuum of the semester I spent out of the country in college. And then, I converted in my late 20s, and so it just sort of people my age, it's not their. People my age are kind of more likely, because I'm 45, to watch the Ten Commandments on Passover. Mm-hmm. Like, that's still their Passover tradition. But I'm going to try this one this year. I will report back.
Yes.
I'll report back.
I think I do see the most robust appreciation of Prince of Egypt from... So we're about 10 years apart, Lee.
Yeah.
I'm 34. And I would say that I see the most robust appreciation of Prince of Egypt from folks, let's say, like, plus or minus 4 years from where mm-hmm. I am. So, yeah. So I think you're right with that Argentina kind of pop culture gap and then just time.
Yeah. Like, I completely missed Hercules. I missed The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Like, all those musicals that kind of came out. Now, I can tell you everything about, like, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin. Those were, like, my, you know, sweet spot of musicals. And The Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, Anastasia, I didn't see until I saw it on stage.
Okay.
And, like, Meg Ryan was in a movie musical about Russian czars? What?
Oh, I didn't realize Meg Ryan was...
She plays Anastasia.
I did not know that.
Yeah. If it comes through, because there's a national tour, it really is... We found ourselves deeply moved. We went with, like, I went with no expectations, because I didn't know what the hell it was. Rob, who goes with me, is to a lot of musicals, is now, he's 29. So Anastasia, like, hit him in his sweet spot of musicals.
Okay.
So he was so excited to see it. And I was like, I don't know anything about it. And we both just, we'll put the video, like, the soundtrack on a loop. It's beautiful.
Awesome. Yeah. I think, actually... Now that you're talking more about the Anastasia musical, I think pre-pandemic, I saw some YouTube video of there maybe being a stage musical of Prince of Egypt.
Ooh.
But I think it was over in London. I think it maybe didn't get good reviews, and then the pandemic happened, so it might have been scrapped. But I haven't looked that up in a while.
I think it's going to be hard for a while to really market something with a big number around plagues.
Yes. You raise a valid point.
I think our
too
appetite
real.
For plague stuff is questionable at the moment.
Yes. At an all-time low.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any other pop culture portrayals of Bible stuff that you think are well done or exciting?
I mean, I could do a whole nother episode of this about Jesus Christ Superstar.
All right. We will revisit it.
Obviously, depending on what version of the Bible we're talking about, obviously that would not necessarily be everyone's part of their Bible. But I am a sucker for the, God, is it 1972?
Okay.
Jesus Christ Superstar movie with Ted Neely. I will say that there are definitely some issues with it. I do think there are some rather anti-Semitic portrayals of the Pharisees that are not, you know, I'm not into that, but I do really love the soundtrack. My mom had the original concept album.
Oh,
stashed away in our basement, and I discovered it at, like, my musical nerdiest point in my life, which was like eighth grade.
Yeah.
And my parents still had a turntable, and so it's like, let me listen to this.
Cool.
So that one holds a special place in my heart. And again, I could do a whole other episode.
Oh, you'll come back. We'll do another one.
Could do part two. Yeah.
Because I think there's a national tour now of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Is there?
I think so. I feel like it's an option in Chicago soon.
That's okay. Well, I'm not too far from Chicago, so even if it's just a Chicago road trip,
Right.
I feel like every few years there will be a tour of Jesus Christ Superstar because it does have that kind of staying power.
Well, this was so much fun to actually get to talk in non-digital words with you.
Yes, likewise. This was very, very fun and exciting. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Do you want people to find or follow you on the internet?
I'm open to it. My Twitter handle is at CarolynLB. I am locked right now, but if you request me and we have sufficient mutuals, I'll probably say hi. I am rage tweeting a lot these days, so if
Yeah.
that's not what you want, you might not want to follow me. But if you and Leah are buds, we will also probably be buds.
Yeah.
So
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been a bl 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 very fun talking to you.
likewise, thanks so much for having me, Leah.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a five-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.